I think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous. Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 231 of Low Limit Football on this 21st of January 2019 on the Beyond the Pitch and FNX Media Networks. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we're going to discuss when a team releases a hymnal. Are they trying too hard? Diogo Jota scores a hat trick for Wolves in a 4-3 thriller against Leicester City on the weekend. Was it the best individual performance on the weekend? We're going to discuss that. PSG embarrasses Guingamp 9-0 in Ligue 1 play with hat tricks from Kylian Mbappe and Enson Cavani. Barcelona wins 3-1 versus Leganes on the weekend by bringing Messi and Rakitic off the bench. But this match came with some controversy. We're going to discuss that as well as the latest on Kevin Prince-Boateng, Gonzalo Higuain, and much, much more with our special guest, Munda Albi Celesti's very own Roy Neymar, who will be joining us in about 15 minutes. First off, my man, Mr. Roberto Rojas, how cold are you right now?
Very cold. But you know what, Joe? I've been having this debate or this kind of thinking for quite some time. You know, it's been very hard for me to get an answer for this. So I was wondering if you could help me with this.
Okay.
Is Virgil van Dijk the new Maldini?
That was what I was going to bring up with you. Whoever thinks right now that Virgil van Dijk is anywhere even close to being Paolo Maldini should have their head examined. Just should have their head examined. And the way you start that is by at 27 years old, because I believe Virgil van Dijk is 27 right now, right?
Correct.
Look at the two trophy cases. Just look at the two trophy cases. What they accomplished at 27 years of age. Paolo Maldini is considered, you know, arguably the greatest defender we've ever seen. I mean, that we know that. That's where we're at with that. Virgil van Dijk is not even necessarily considered the greatest defender of his era, right?
No.
So when we look at it through those eyes, you've got to take that into consideration, and that's really where we stand. So I know this was a suggestion on Twitter the other day, and pretty much everyone basically told the guy to delete his account. I mean, it was such a horrible suggestion. So I think we really need to, and this is what social media does to us, right? I mean, somebody makes some outrageous suggestion and all of a sudden everyone's like, it's topic for debate.
This guy is world class because he scored 11 goals, and you know exactly what I'm talking about, Joe.
Big deal. Big deal. Right? I mean, come on. Because you scored 11 goals. You know, I told this to a bunch of my friends from my soccer team. This is going back a few years now. We had a guy, they brought a guy in. They're like, oh, this guy's great. He's from England. He's such a good guy. You know, he can play, blah, blah, blah. And he, you know, he comes in with the English accent and everything and you know, the whole bit. And the guy is probably one of the worst footballers I've ever played with in my life. And I came back and said, just because you have an English accent doesn't mean you know how to play football.
Exactly.
That's it. So, I mean, again, so what? You scored 11 goals. Great. I'm so proud of you. Jose Luis Chilavert scored 11 goals, I think. I mean, do we think of Chilavert as the greatest goalkeeper of all time because he scored 11 goals?
One of them, yeah.
Well, not because he scored 11 goals, though.
No, no, it's not because of that.
No, so.
But he could bring a, he could give a good punch. Apparently.
Oh yeah, yeah, he could do that, and he holds world records. So
exactly, there you go. So go, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. So, but yeah, that was what I was going to bring up with you was the Virgil van Dijk thing. That was kind of nonsense, I think. But hey, whatever, to each his own. So, Rob, before we get into everything, let's go pay some bills and run our promo from On It. All right.
On It is a health and fitness juggernaut dedicated to delivering total human optimization to its vast customer base of athletes, thinkers, fitness gurus, and entrepreneurs. Through a wide array of products and supplements, On It combines cutting-edge science, earth-grown nutrients, and time-tested strategies to help people reach peak performance. Whether you're climbing mountains or biking down them, building businesses or closing sales, chasing PRs in the weight room or running a marathon, On It is the brand you want in your back pocket. As one of the fastest growing health and fitness companies in the world, On It refuses to bring anything but the very best to market. Whether it be energy bars, protein shakes, creatine, or their flagship product, Alpha Brain, On It's diverse lineup of products and supplements are backed by science and research. You can save up to 10% off by visiting onit.com and using the coupon code BEYOND.
So go out and check out the folks over at On It. Rob, it is your honor, my friend, for trivia tonight. So your turn to stump me.
I have a simple one for you.
All right.
Very, very simple. Can you name the top five teams with the most goals in all competitions this season?
And I saw this. I saw this graphic too. So top five teams with most goals. Okay.
In the top five leagues this season in all competitions.
Right. I'm going to write down most of them. Okay. All right. I've got three of them that I can remember for sure. So okay. I've got to do a little more thinking about it, but I do remember seeing the graphic. And we'll definitely come back to that in a little under an hour. We'll definitely give you the answer to that one. So, let's jump into its opening thoughts tonight, Rob. And the big one on opening thoughts for us tonight is Peter Cech. Peter Cech announced his retirement at the end of 2018-2019 season. Going to be leaving Arsenal. And we reflect back. I mean, Peter Cech is, you know, recognizably one of the most popular goalkeepers we've ever seen in this modern era. But the question is, I guess, where does he rank? And again, this is not to poo-poo Peter Cech. I mean, he's been a wonderful footballer and loyal to Chelsea. You think about that. There's talk about Chelsea possibly bringing him back at the end of the season to sign like one of those one-day contracts, a la what the NFL does here to a lot of their former greats that teams have. So for you, Rob, where does Peter Cech rank for you among his contemporaries, you know, among the players that he's played with, not necessarily in England. I mean, we can look at England as a whole, but also looking at, you know, Italy, Spain, you know, around the world for his era. Where do you rank Peter Cech?
I would have to say he has to be one of the best goalkeepers of his generation. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's certainly not the first name that people come into mind when you look at goalkeepers like Gigi Buffon or Manuel Neuer, Iker Casillas, who have been much more successful than Peter Cech. But he certainly, I think, at least in the Premier League, has become more consistent and perhaps the best goalkeeper of that, I guess, of his generation in the Premier League. I think we can't disagree any other way, because you look at goalkeepers like De Gea or Van der Sar, who are, one is younger, the other is older, but I think in the generation of Peter Cech, you know, born in 1982, when you look at all the goalkeepers that have gone there, Jerry Dudek, you look at goalkeepers like
David Seaman,
Paul Robinson, you look at David James, you know, you have a lot of goalkeepers, but I think with Peter Cech, you know, he has the record for the fewest appearances to reach 100 clean sheets, you know, 4 Premier League titles, 4 FA Cups, 3 League Cups, a Europa League, a Champions League, all-time record for clean sheets in the club's history for Chelsea. Mm-hmm. You know, he's played in a World Cup, he's played in Euros, he's won the Golden Glove with 2 separate teams, 4 times overall. He was actually named the best goalkeeper in the world at one point, Joe. It's in 2005, and was named the best goalkeeper in the Champions League on 3 separate occasions. So yeah, I think he has to go down as one of the best in his of his generation, at least from a Premier League standpoint. I mean, you have to look at perhaps how, I guess, of him reinventing himself, you know, especially after that tremendous head injury back in 2006 that, you know, basically changed his life and changed the way that he played forever. But he's always been a sensational goalkeeper, tall, athletic, agile, you know, physically strong, very well-rounded. You know, he's mentally strong, leadership, you know, he has good decision-making. And you kind of saw that all throughout his career. So, yeah, I think overall, especially from Chelsea, he's been perhaps – one of the best goalkeepers of his generation, perhaps the greatest goalkeeper in Chelsea history. So, yeah, I think the accolades are there in front of him. And deep down, I think he will go down as perhaps one of the best goalkeepers, the best goalkeeper of his generation in the Premier League. Not in the world, mind you, because you still have other goalkeepers who have been much more better than him. But deep down, and if you have to rank them in a top 10 or even a top 5, yeah, I think Petr Cech is definitely in that list of best goalkeepers of his generation.
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at it, you brought up a great name in Edwin van der Sar, who's kind of the gold standard for that the 90s goalkeeper, right? You know, leading right up into the 2000s. He's kind of the gold standard for the EPL goalkeeper. And I think Petr Cech, you know, is about at the same level, okay? I might put van der Sar a little ahead of him, but as far as contemporaries go, the two that I would absolutely say are ahead of Petr Cech career-wise all time would be guys like you said, like Buffon and Casillas. Those are the guys that I would think would be ahead of him. But I think you're right. When we look at Petr Cech, you know, you have to consider his body of work and really, you know, say that he is certainly one of the top five goalkeepers of his era. You know, and although he only did it quote unquote in one league, and I don't play too much into that, Rob, where you know, people go and say, oh, well, he only did it in one league. He only did it for one team. That doesn't matter. You know, I think he performed at one of the highest levels in one of the top leagues in the world. And he did it for a very long time. You know, you look at the first title he won with Chelsea in 2004, 2005. You go all the way up to his most recent titles in 14-15 with Chelsea. You know, you look at the FA Cups. He also won the UEFA Under-21 Championship in 2002 with the Czech Republic. Was named the Golden Player at that tournament as well. So he does have some international success as well. Wasn't blessed Czech Republic wise with players at the, you know, in the era that he was in from, I would say, 2003 to about 2012, as opposed to some of the other great teams at those times. You think of the, you know, Italy in 2006, you look at the Germanys of the world and even France up until that point, where we have the transition from the Zidane team to this team is right around the same time as well. So, you know, and then obviously the great Spanish teams of that era as well. So, you know, he was also, it's one of those unfortunate things where I think that the Czech Republic sides would have been very, very good sides on many different occasions, just that they ran into historically good teams in this particular era. So and that shouldn't blemish Petr Cech's record at all. And like you said, Petr Cech was a wonderful shot stopper. Rob, the one thing I always thought about with Petr Cech is his ability to stop shots. But he became more of a cerebral goalkeeper throughout his career, always learning. And I think, you know, you and I were having a little conversation before we hit the air, and Petr Cech is one of those guys to me that might actually make a good head coach, Rob, in the future. You know, I know his name didn't come up in our conversation, but what would you think of that? Petr Cech as a head coach?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you kind of look at his kind of his personal life. He is also a key musician. He's actually a really good drum player. I don't know if you saw some of his videos on social media, but he's a really good drummer. Apart from that, speaking Czech, he also speaks English, French, German, and Spanish. So, yeah, he definitely has that intelligence of trying to, you know, if he was to be a coach, he would definitely, you know, do something in any league, I would say. And he definitely has that intelligence, you know, as a leader. And of course, you know how managers are made because of their leadership, because of the way that they handle themselves, how they're good tacticians and whatnot. I think with Petr Cech and that type of a person, he would be a really good coach in the end, should he get the opportunity.
Definitely, no doubt about it. So let's table our Petr Cech conversation, and I'm going to hurry up and get our guest in here, you know, just to add him into the conversation. I think, you know, and then we'll transition gears a little bit, you know, from what we were talking about, and we'll move on to the next level of our discussion. So joining us now on Low Limit Football from Mundo Albi Celeste, the owner of Mundo Albi Celeste, is Mr. Roy Namer. Roy, welcome back, man. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Good, good, man. I want to jump in, you know, because I know you also, not only are you an expert on all things Argentina, but you're also an expert on Barcelona. So I actually want to open the conversation with you about Barcelona, because obviously on the weekend, Messi starts on the bench. Ivan Rakitic starts on the bench. They do go up 1-0 on an Ousmane Dembele goal. But then Leganes comes back and ties it. They bring Messi off the bench to come in. They bring Rakitic in a double switch and then move on to a 3-1 victory. But what I want to talk about is the Luis Suarez goal, because it was highly controversial. A lot of time spent on VAR looking at this play. Obviously, the ball's going into the Leganes keeper's hands. Luis Suarez sticks a foot in there and swipes it into the goal. It's questionable whether he kicked the ball versus whether he kicked his hand. And then obviously the goalkeeper did require some attention afterwards, but it was reviewed at length by VAR, and VAR determined that it was a goal and not a foul. So I want your opinion on this, because when I saw it firsthand, when I saw it in real time and when I saw it on the replays initially, I thought goal completely. But then as I kept watching the replay, I immediately changed my mind, because it looks like he kicks the goalkeeper's right hand. So I'd like your opinion on that play overall.
Yeah, it was controversial. It was definitely controversial. Whether the goal ultimately would have been given or, you know, taken away or whatever it was, people would have been for it or against the decision made by VAR. I'm actually the opposite of you. I thought in real time, I thought it was a foul. It looked like he had kicked him in the chest or in the arm or even in the face. I thought it was a foul right away. And the second I saw them going to VAR, I'm like, well, you know, the goal is going to be taken away. When I saw it on the replay, I kind of changed my mind. I'm like, you know what? Was there contact? Yeah, definitely. There was contact, in my opinion. I think Suarez did touch the goalkeeper for sure. But I feel like he got the ball first. And one thing that has always bothered me for as long as I can remember regarding this beautiful sport of ours is I've always thought that goalkeepers always get the benefit of the doubt. Goalkeepers are very much protected, overprotected sometimes. And that's something, as a goalkeeper myself, ironically enough, that's something that has always bothered me, because we see it time and time again, you know, whether it's a corner kick or a free kick, a ball sent into the area, player goes, you know, he goes to head the ball, goalkeeper catches it, player touches the goalkeeper, goalkeeper goes down, it's called a foul. It's not, it's still a contact sport, you know, that's something that's always bothered me. And the more I watched the replay, the more I was convinced that, you know what? No, it's for me, it's a goal. With that said, had it not been given, I could have understood. You know, I would have understood. Yeah, I kind of get why it wasn't a goal and whatnot. But in my opinion, put my support for Barcelona aside. For me, that was a goal.
Okay.
And thankfully, it was given.
Okay, let's jump across the Atlantic Ocean here, because I do want to bring up one particular thing before I throw you over to Rob and have him jump in, and that is the move that the LA Galaxy made to hire Guillermo Barros-Coloto over from Boca Juniors. Rob and I made light of the California Derby that happens between San Jose and LA Galaxy. We'll now have a super classical feel to it with Matias Almeida, the former River player, coaching over at San Jose. I'd like your thoughts on Schelotto in terms of how it ended for him at Boca Juniors and how you think he will transition to MLS now as a coach instead of as a player.
I think it will be, you know, significantly, I don't want to say easier, but less pressure, so to speak, with LA than with Boca. Managing number one, any team in Argentina is pressure filled. You know, the demands are there. And especially when you coach Boca or River, the demands are even higher, you know, and the team wasn't, despite the fact that, you know, Libertadores final and everything, the team wasn't really clicking. They weren't performing. The star players, Tevez, Zarate, and, you know, not really performing either. And then, okay, they got the final of the Libertadores, and people were saying, well, if Boca wins, Scalotto is the new coach of the Argentina national team. And if he loses, well, he's not. And it kind of gives you an idea, well, okay, so everything hinges on one match, which I think is silly, but, you know, that's the mentality it is like over there. For him, with Scalotto, I was never, again, and I'm a Boca supporter, I never felt comfortable with him at the helm. As a player, great. You know what he did, what he achieved, everything, fantastic. As a coach, tactically, he got out-coached in both legs by Marcelo Gallardo in the final. of both legs got outcoached. I was never comfortable with him. I never enjoyed watching Boca with him at the helm. That's not to say that, you know, there weren't some ups. There definitely were. But I was never happy with him. With that said, him in the MLS, in MLS, might be an easier move for him, you know. He has to bounce back off that loss, you know, the Libertadores final. How he's going to fare in MLS, I think he'll do pretty well. I don't think he's going to do a Tata Martino where his first season he reaches, what was it, the quarterfinals or at least the playoffs of the MLS, and the second season he wins the MLS Cup. I don't think it's going to be like that. But I don't think it's going to be that bad either. You mentioned Matias Almeida. Now, that's a guy I would like to see coaching the Argentina national team, or at least my team. As a, you know, I think he's done very, very well, despite his very young age as a coach. When he goes up against Scalotto, my money's on Almeida. It's not on Scalotto, that's for sure. But to answer your question, I think Scalotto will have it easier, at least pressure-wise, in MLS, as opposed to, you know, to Boca. I don't think he's going to see anything in MLS that he hasn't seen, you know, from the board or the players or whatnot, you know, from Argentina. And he is somewhat familiar with MLS. You know, he did play there for a couple of seasons, and that definitely helps. And there's not that language barrier either. You know, his English isn't bad, actually. So I think he'll do okay. I don't see him winning an MLS Cup, but I could definitely see him, you know, at least making the playoffs in a couple of seasons.
You know, it's actually kind of funny that you mentioned Matias Almeida, because, you know, this is a man that I think is in a way kind of underrated, but you kind of have to look at all these young Argentine coaches, Roy, that are making it's kind of funny that they're all coming from the same generation as well. You know, Almeida now at San Jose, Guillermo Mascherano at LA Galaxy, Gallardo at River. You go to Europe, you look at Pochettino at Spurs, Diego Simeone as well. At Atletico Madrid, you look at so many, you know, Argentine, you know, coaches coming in. It's been quite interesting, to say. But it's the funny part is that none of them want to coach the Argentine national team. But I mean, if you had to pick one, and assuming, of course, you know, Scaloni does a good job and would obviously end the debate, you know, who would you like to see at the helm long term for the Argentine national team at the moment?
See, a lot of people will say Pochettino. I wouldn't. I think the guy's a serial, and I'm going to come off sounding very harsh, I think the serial loser. And this is me. I'm not a fan of his. I respect what he's doing at Tottenham and everything. Long term, sure, that's great. But he can't win when it counts, I don't think. To go back to the question, for me, it would be one of two. Either Marcelo Gallardo or Matias Almeida. Almeida has proven it, and Gallardo has proven it. Almeida won with, I want to say, Guadalajara in Mexico. He won the Clausura. He even won the Champions League, the CONCACAF Champions League. I believe it was two seasons ago, or last season.
Last season,
Last season, Gallardo won, obviously, you know, the Libertadores, two of them. Two very young coaches. I love their styles. I've watched a bit of, I remember when, this was, I think, after Sampaoli got fired / quit from the national team. You know, I just went on for fun just watching Matias Almeida's teams, because I'll be very honest, I haven't seen much of the Mexican league lately. Although, I do read a lot and everything. And I was watching, you know, YouTube clips of his teams and whatnot, and would read press conferences and everything. And I like the way he conducts himself. And for me, that's a big plus. And then someone like Gallardo, well, he's proven it. You know, he could handle the pressure. He's won two Libertadores titles with River. He has that experience. He's young. He still has that, you know, he can still connect with the players. For me, it will definitely be one of those two. You know, people will say Simeone. I don't think Simeone has the players, at least right now, to play the style that he wants with the Argentina national team. Pochettino, long term, maybe, possibly, but this is me being biased. I'm not a fan of his. I wouldn't take.
You know, it's kind of interesting that you mentioned Gallardo as well, going back to him, because, you know, you look at him, he has a contract, I think, until 2021, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, he's going to be there for a couple years, and rightly so. He's already proved to win literally almost every title at River Plate, you know, Sudamericana, Libertadores, domestic titles and whatnot. Do you feel that perhaps before making that jump to the national team that he's already ready to prove himself in Europe? You know, he's played and in France before, so he has that connection. But certainly he has the capability and the CV to do it in Europe before heading out to the national team.
I think so. I don't think a coach is, you know, slightly different from a player. But I don't think a coach has to manage in Europe to actually be successful later on if you were to coach a national team. I'm not of that opinion. I don't believe it. Because, I mean, for example, if you look at, let's say, maybe not the best example, but someone like Sampaoli, Jorge Sampaoli, you know, with Chile, he won the Copa America. But before that, he took Brazil literally to the limits at the World Cup. You know, they lost on penalties and they had all the injuries and Brazil playing at home and everything. He could have easily knocked Brazil out in the round of 16, gotten to the quarterfinals, and then who knows what would have happened. It, you know, it's different from players because players, obviously, the style is different. You know, North America, South America, Europe, Asia, whatever. The playing styles are vastly different. South America is more physical. Europe is maybe a bit more technical or a bit more polished, so to speak, for lack of a better term. And I think for a player, it's more necessary to play in Europe, at least just to get an idea of, you know, the feel of how it is to play against, and I hate to say this, against the best players in the world, because right now the best players are in Europe, has been for some time and will be for in the, you know, for the foreseeable future. So someone like Gattardo, if, for example, his contract's up in 2-3 years, if after that he goes straight to the national team, I have no problem with that. I'm not of the opinion that he has to go to Europe first, no.
No, absolutely. And he's already, I think, proven himself even then to handle such a pressurized job like that because of the expectation that is at River. So I completely agree. So going back to the MLS real quick, there has been a bit of a situation happening so far. You know, recently we just saw the arrival of PT Martinez from River Plate that is set to join Atlanta. But the big issue here is that he will probably be signed as a DP, whereas Atlanta already have 3 DPs at the moment. You look at Miguel Miron, you look at Joseph Martinez, who just recently signed an extension. And look at Ezequiel Barco, who is in an interesting case. Came to Atlanta just last year from Independiente. A lot of expectations of him. He's only 19. You know, he came in for $15 million. But there are rumors at the moment so far that a player like him will be set to go on loan so that they would free a DP spot for PT Martinez to join in with Miguel Miron and with Joseph Martinez due to the fact that Almiron has still not signed a deal yet with the team in Europe and could possibly stay there until the summer. I mean, you know, and Joe, I actually would like to go to you first because I would like your opinion on this.
Yeah.
What do you make of this whole situation? And you know, where do you stand? And you know, what would be the right choice, I think, from an Atlanta perspective?
Well, I think, first of all, Atlanta has to understand where they stand in the whole market. You know, I think their asking price right now for Miguel Almiron is a little high. Right. I think we've all come to that conclusion. And that's why there's been this logjam with Newcastle United, with this move happening. And I think right now, for me, the Ezequiel Barco possibility of loaning Barco out somewhere is a panic move because of the rules that exist with MLS, where you can only have 3 DP players at the same time. They have Tito Villalba. They have Joseph Martinez. They have Almiron. And now they've added PT Martin. I'm sorry. They not Villalba. They have Barco, Martinez, Almiron, and now they've added PT Martinez, which I think they kind of shot themselves in the foot, and really PT helped them shoot themselves in the foot by announcing that move happening before Atlanta United announced it. So I think right now Atlanta's in a rock and a hard place. They need to do something. And I think right now the Barco thing is a panic move because they think they can get more money for Almiron than right now what Newcastle United's offering.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Roy, I would like your thoughts on this as well, because this is certainly not the situation that Atlanta is trying to show to the entire world of being a team that is different from the rest and developing these young South American stars and then putting them into a position where they could head to Europe and do successfully well. But this is not a good look, I think, for Atlanta if they're in this really weird situation.
No, you're right. They're, like you said, they're in between a rock and a hard spot. Let's not forget also Atlanta, just a couple, you know, MLS wise, it's going to be their third or fourth season, I believe, the third season.
Yep.
The one coming up. What they've accomplished so far is, wow, incredible and, you know, unheard of. And hats off to them, their management, to Tata Martino and everyone, despite the fact that he left. But hats off to them. But now, if you're trying to show off, you know, if you're trying to get that exposure of, hey, South American players, you could come here, play with us, and sort of use us as a springboard, so to speak, you know, to leapfrog into Europe. Well, it's not the best image. It's not the best image. If I were them, I don't want to say by any means, but I'd definitely sign up someone like PT Martinez for sure. Get him, lock him in. I think he's a fantastic talent, probably, arguably, in my opinion, will be one of the best in the MLS for years to come if he does ultimately stay there. As for your boy, Almiron, well, it looks like they're playing hardball. I think they're overestimating how much he's worth value-wise. I'm not saying he's not worth it or he is worth it, but I think for them, because they just won the MLS Cup, they think they could probably, you know, squeeze every little penny that they could out of Newcastle. And I think Newcastle, from the rumors anyways, you have the inside scoop. You know that I do. But, you know, they're slowly backing off, and I don't think that's the right image to give. You know, he's a fantastic talent. I watched him in the playoffs. I've watched him for Paraguay also as well. He's a good guy, man. He's a good player and everything, and one of the best of the MLS. And if he wants to make that jump to Europe, you know, good for him. Honestly, good for him and good for any player, South American or not. Use the MLS, make a name for yourself there, go to Europe, fantastic. But don't get greedy. And whether it's him, his agent, I'm serious, whether it's him, his agent, or the club, don't get greedy. If you're going to sell him off, fine, sell him. You're going to get Pete Martinez, who's just as good of a talent. I'm not going to say as better because I don't want to get into it. But he's, you know, he's good. And it's sort of like, at least talent-wise, you know, like for like. They're both very, very talented. And, you know, then you mentioned someone like Barco, Ezequiel Barco. Well, they did a lot to get him. You know, it made the news and everything. They got him. Keep him. Because now if you're going to get rid of Barco, then that's not a very good message that you're sending in the future.
Exactly. No, 100%. I think the best scenario is to try to get something done to sell Almiron in the end of the transfer window. So that way you can still get the money, you know, you can have PT Martinez and you can keep Barco with really talented young players that could really help this Atlanta side moving forward. I think that would be the best decision, but apparently the people at Atlanta know much better than I do. So we just have to wait and see heading into the next 10 days now, exactly. Speaking of agents and greedy money, you know, this is actually one of the players that I wanted to mention just recently. And of course, this gentleman, or at least, you know, a significant other of this gentleman, is making the news. And that's Mauro Icardi's wife and agent, Wanda. Recently, they have just been reported that because of her statements of saying that Mauro Icardi is not expected to sign a contract extension with Inter, even though his contract is due until next year, she just recently come out, or at least from reading from reports, that they will now set to renew the contract, despite interest from all other clubs. I mean, Roy, this is a really messy situation, even worse than what's going on in Atlanta, because this is a player that I think rightly so, and for all intents and purposes, you know, deserves that one-up. And I think because of the way that Real Madrid are in currently at the moment, I think the striker that they need really is someone like Icardi. I mean, what do you think of this whole situation? And do you see Icardi leaving Inter?
Quick answer to your last question, no. I think Icardi stays. I think Wanda was just sort of using the other teams to get Inter to raise their price, raise his salary. I think he'd be, as much as I hate to say it, I think he would be a perfect fit at Madrid. I think he's the guy they need. He's the number nine. He'll take over Benzema. He'll score. He's the guy. He has that. The one thing I like about Icardi, or one of the things I like about Icardi, is that he has that mentality of, forget the rest. I'm going to do what I want to do. I don't care about the pressure. I don't care what the fans think. I don't care what the board thinks. I'm here to play. I'm going to score. And he has done that. And he continues to prove himself with an Inter side that, if we're being honest, is not the best. You know, they're not the worst. They have the talent, but they're not the best, at least competing in Europe to get that Champions League. Icardi's been carrying that team on his shoulders for a while now. I think he stays with Inter. I think he's going to sign that extension. In a way, I would hate to see him stay. In a way, good for him. You know, he'll become a legend there, an absolute legend if he stays, because he's going to be spending his peak years, his absolute peak years with Inter. And let's be honest, he's probably not going to win a Champions League anytime soon if he stays there. I love the guy. Off the field. I'm just talking strictly as a player himself. I love him. I love what he brings. I love his heart, his grit, his determination. Probably not. Not the biggest fan of his agent, but that's another story. I'd hate to see him go to Madrid. He'd be the perfect fit there. But I think ultimately, I think he's going to stay in Italy with Inter.
Now, Now, I want to bring up another striker, Roy, another Argentinian striker who is currently at the moment in Italy, but getting ready to make his way over to England, and that is Gonzalo Higuain. It looks like we have an agreement between Chelsea and Juventus for the loaning of the striker. Right now, the holdup is Milan, as Milan tries to secure a replacement for him. Rumor is that they've offered 35 million euro for Piontek over at Genoa, and Genoa is actually making a move to replace Piontek by adding Marco Piazza from Fiorentina, who's actually a loanee from Juventus as well, to go full circle. But I want to look at the Gonzalo Higuain portion of this mess that we have here in the transfer window, because he, by some accounts, people felt that he was doing a good job at Milan. He's leading the team in goal scoring, but he wasn't scoring as prolifically as he had been, let's say, at Juventus or even at Napoli prior to that. So moving to Chelsea, what do you expect out of Gonzalo Higuain, especially being reunited with Maurizio Sarri, the same guy who helped him or was part of a system that got him the goal-scoring title in Italy a few years back?
Oh, it's a hate-love story with Higuain. I loved the guy before. I really did. I thought he was the guy to help lead Argentina, and he was scoring for fun, essentially, at one point. With Madrid before leaving, and then he did very well with Napoli, and then Juventus, and everything. He's played for some top clubs.
Mm-hmm. I think all the clubs he's played for are top. Yeah. If you think about it.
Yeah, literally, River, Madrid, Napoli, Juventus, Milan, and now Chelsea. They're top clubs, and he's scoring. He scored, I believe, over 250 club goals at the highest possible level, which is absolutely insane. Mm-hmm. And I'll be the first one to raise my hand and bitch and complain about the guy, but I'll also be the first one to raise my hand and say, you know what? Give the devil his due. Mm-hmm. He scored goals. And the thing with Higuain is he's low on confidence, and I think he's a confidence type of player, and especially for a striker, right? If a striker's low on confidence, forget it. I mean, look at Fernando Torres about 8-9 years ago when he was with Chelsea. He was a laughingstock at one point. Higuain is like that. You know, I don't think he's getting, I'm sure he's getting the support, the proper support at Milan. I don't doubt it. But I think him personally, he's low on confidence. And Sarri had him at Napoli. He knows him. He was able to get the absolute best out of him. What he scored, was it a Serie A record 37 or 38 goals?
36.
Which is in 36. So 36 goals in Serie A with Napoli. You know, not even a Juventus, like with Napoli, and he brought them so close, you know. But Higuain with Sarri could be very interesting. Again, if Sarri could get the best out of Higuain, you're going to get an Higuain that will score goals for fun. It might take him a bit of time to adjust to the EPL, although I think physically he's there. Maybe a little bit on the slow side, but, you know, he has the experience, I think, and the awareness to sort of cover that up. If Sarri could get his confidence back up, I think you're going to see an Higuain that's rejuvenated. And let's not forget, he's still young. Higuain is not 35. Higuain's 31, I believe, and just turned 31 mm-hmm. a couple of months ago or 2 months ago. So he still has a couple of years left at the top. And, you know, he could probably be the guy to help turn Chelsea's season around a little bit, at least in the league, to try and secure a Champions League spot. If Sarri cannot get his confidence going, Chelsea will be shooting themselves in the foot, because they're not going to have a full, a good striker, and they're going to have to keep using Hazard as a false number nine. So it all depends. It's going to be a big, big gamble for Higuain. If it works out, great. If you get snake eyes, forget it. You're stuck with with a player that's very, very low on confidence.
No doubt about it. Last question I want to ask you tonight before we let you go, and this is a topic that's kind of fast-forwarded from last week, and it's the Marcelo Bielsa topic about spying on Frank Lampard, Leeds United versus Derby a couple of weeks ago. He admitted that he sent a spy in to watch their training. You fast forward, he actually admitted this past week that he spies on every coach and every training, and he said it's kind of a normal thing for him to do. He's known to be a preparation guy. Where do you stand on Marcelo Bielsa's revelation that he spies everywhere, and Frank Lampard's not the singular person that he's ever spied on?
If you're not cheating, you're not trying. No. Listen, I agree to that to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. Now, people listening to this are going to think, well, he probably loves players that dive and stuff like that. No, I don't. there's a certain limit. Look, it's not uncommon. You know, we watch South American football, we watch football outside of Europe. It's not uncommon, especially in South America, or even more so in Argentina. I'm not going to take the moral high ground and say, no, it was wrong and this and that. Listen, if it helps get my team promoted from second division to first division, I'll go spy for him. I'll freaking help him set up a tent. I'll get the binoculars. I'll get everything. I don't care. If it's my team that's getting spied on, you know what? So be it. I'm sure it's happened. I'm sure it's happened to all of our teams, knowingly or not, that our teams have gone spied on. If my team's getting spied on, hey, you know, it is what it is. It's up to my coach to figure it out. You know, I'll coach the other guys, see what you're able to do. It's my problem with this, and I'm sure you guys would agree, or at least one of you, and I'm hoping one of you would agree, is that Europe, or at least the UK, you know, when this story first broke out, oh, Bielsa's a cheater, he's this, he's that, they should get some points deducted and whatnot. Like, are you serious? Like, it's, people have done it for years, and people are going to continue to do it.
Here's the thing, you know, and I'm just going to jump in here. There's no rule saying he can't do it, you know?
There you go.
So for me, he didn't break any rules, so he's really not cheating, okay? You know, yeah, you want to talk about the moral high ground or whatever, fine. You can go ahead and go there, whether it's right to do it or not. But it wasn't cheating. Let's establish that. There were no rules broken. You know, for me, and this was actually, he was spying at Derby. So he sent somebody to their training ground. It wasn't like the match was at Leeds. The match was at Derby. So don't you have a personal responsibility for security in your training sessions that you need to kind of, you know, be aware of who's watching and who's not?
Yeah, 1,000%. I agree 1,000%. He sent them to your stadium. Listen, you have security. You have to take the necessary precautions. Do it. If you catch him, good for you. You caught him. You could call him out on it. Do what you want. Excellent. Fine. Whatever. But if you don't catch him and then later on comes out, well, if you get a guy like Bielsa who's going to come out and say, yeah, well, I'm going to give you like a whatever it was, a 3-hour PowerPoint presentation showing you that I know more about your club than you do about your own, then he's going to show you off. He's going to tell you off in his own polite, politically correct way, or, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Listen, it's at the end of the day, it's a sport. It's football. It's just enjoy it. Have fun. I don't understand people that take this far too seriously than they should. If you read stories in, I don't know, in South America, you'll have stadiums where they turn off the hot water for the opposing team's dressing room in the showers. Mm-hmm. So you have the opposing team that has a shower in cold water, or the hotels where, you know, the fans throw the you know, firecrackers and all that stuff and the flares. It is what it is. It's part of the game, and no one got hurt. And like you guys said, there's no rule against it.
Oh, agreed. Roy, I want to thank you for coming on the show and joining us tonight. We always love having you on. You're one of our favorite guests, and we look forward to the next time you're available and can join us on the show, man.
Thank you guys for having me. Always a pleasure. It's been several times I'm on here now. It's more and more fun every time I'm on here. Thank you for having me. And no, for sure, we'll definitely do it again.
Awesome,
thank
man.
You
I appreciate
so much.
It. Have a good night.
Thank you guys. You too.
And that was Roy Neymar from Mundo Albiceleste joining us to talk all things Argentina. Rob, let's jump into some of our topics here tonight because I think I want to continue this. We went down a nice little path with Roy in terms of the MLS part. Miguel Almiron, you know, Pete Martinez, Ezequiel Barco, that whole mess. So, you know, going back to what we had talked about quickly, it's really become a little bit of an issue. And like I had mentioned to Roy and to you earlier, the whole idea of PT making the mention that he was coming to Atlanta United, then, you know, obviously Atlanta shopping Miguel Almiron, you know, that is pretty much public knowledge. And they have a suitor in Newcastle who has agreed to terms with Miguel Almiron in terms of his salary, his wage, even though it goes against kind of what the rules are that Newcastle have set. But really, at this point, it's all about the transfer fee. And they're asking for 30 million euro. I think, Rob, when you and I looked him up when we were starting to talk about this, I think Almiron is valued at somewhere around the 17, 18 million euro ballpark.
Somewhere around like that. And that makes sense. That's fine. I think that's perfect.
Right. But that's and I would imagine that because I don't know if we've heard the Newcastle offer. Right. I don't know that I've that I've heard that part yet. But clearly, whatever that number is, it is not enough for Atlanta United to, quote unquote, roll out of bed. So, I mean, are we in trouble here? Or my worst fear, Rob, is that we're going to see the DP rule changed for this instance. We've seen this happen plenty of times. Actually, it started with Jermaine Jones, if you remember, coming over to, if I remember correctly, was acquired by the Chicago Fire, but because of some rule change, New England Revolution owned him and he ended up going to New England. So we've seen MLS change rules to not necessarily to favor one team or another, but to make something work. And my fear is that they're going to do that here rather than force Atlanta to say, hey, you know, we need to sell him. What's the offer? And then move forward. So what are your thoughts on this whole situation as this continues to churn and we only have about 10 days left in the window?
Yeah, no, I mean, this is certainly not a situation that any of the teams, be it Atlanta and and Newcastle want to be in when dealing with a player like Miguel Almirón. I mean, sure, his agent did say that there are other suitors, but who is willing to do such a thing if you're essentially... I was actually listening to Tim Vickery the other day. It's almost as if Newcastle are playing poker, you know, just waiting for the next move to happen. I think to use a term of that you're familiar with. I think it's still something that I feel it should have been decided early on. I think the easiest decision would have obviously to get rid of Almirón, as dramatic as that needs to be, because I feel that he's already proven enough. And I think for Atlanta, you know, given the fact that you technically do have his replacement, yes, PT Martinez could play as a winger, but I think his best position is as a central player. Where Almirón plays, he can get that number 10 shirt that he's known for at River. And Barco stays, you still have Martinez, and everyone's a winner. I think that's the easiest thing to do. But I think, you know, Atlanta are trying to think otherwise. I don't see a move. I really wouldn't. Of course, I wouldn't be surprised if it does happen that they do change this DP rule. But I also don't understand, you know, why this wasn't settled on beforehand. For PT, on his perspective, you can't. That's the thing, though. You can't blame him for saying such a thing if it's already public knowledge. If he is clearly saying it, then surely the people around him, you know, his agent, the teams that are giving him to tell him that. Because I think, yes, you know, players don't tend to always announce their future after a game or after a final. You know, they usually want to keep quiet and say, oh, let's see what happens. I don't know yet, that kind of stuff. But rarely do players say, yes, I'm going to go to said and said club. That would typically mean you are going to said and said club.
Right.
So that's not his fault. I'm sure the people, his agent or the people around him, are telling him to say that. So, you know, that's on them at this point. It's not on PT. It's more basically on Atlanta or even River at this point.
Yeah, no doubt
to
about
say
it.
Such a thing. So, yeah, this has really been a really messy situation, but we'll see what happens. There's still 10 days left. You know, things are supposed to be heating up from what I'm hearing, by the end of the transfer window. And I will be the first to say, you know, I would also not be surprised if, you know, he does stay till the summer, because I think that's the most that he can do. I think Almirón stays till the summer, you know, does whatever he has to do in the Champions League, CONCACAF Champions League, goes to the Copa America, hopefully does a good performance, then gets sold off because of the interest is there in the summer. That's what his agent said. But I think, because of everything just happening in this whole thing, I think it would be much, you know, safer to just sell him off to somewhere where they can get us a certain amount of money, the way our clubs are willing to buy.
And, you know, I just want to add to it as well that if they do go that route where they decide to sell Almirón in the summer, they loan out Barco, they've got PT coming in, they keep Almirón until the summer and then sell him in the summer. I think that's, for me, the worst case scenario for Atlanta United, for Miguel Almirón, and for PT Martinez, because Martinez and Almirón kind of play the similar position, right? That attacking midfield, that number 10 spot. Martinez can be moved out a little bit.
Yep.
He can play wide, but
yes, he can.
But I think in general, though, their position of choice is that central, that number 10, like I said. And I think, and we've seen it a couple of times with, we've seen it, you know, for me personally, seeing it at Juventus with Dybala, with Douglas Costa, with Federico Bernardeschi. Although they all want to, you know, they're all considered strikers or attacking midfielders, they all want to play on the right side and come in, right? We've seen it even with Dybala and the Argentinian national team, because he plays exactly like Messi, right? So I think that can become an issue for Atlanta United, for Frank DeBoer, to keep both players happy, to be able to play them. And I don't know that, Martinez is going to be necessarily happy stepping out wide. Also, when that happens, it's almost a done deal for Barco, because Barco would be out as a left winger, and we would see him actually, you know, possibly lose playing time that he really can't afford to lose at this point. So I think, as far as this move goes, I think Atlanta United needs to make a move, Rob. I just think that they need to make it in this window. I think waiting till the summer and then moving somebody, I think, is probably worst case scenario, in my opinion.
100% agreed. 100% agreed. So,
let's jump over to another situation back into Europe, and let's talk about Kalidou Koulibaly and what happened with him over the past week. Koulibaly appealed his red card suspension from Napoli, dating back to the racial abuse that he suffered when Napoli played at Inter Milan at the San Siro a few weeks ago, just before the Christmas break, and the appeal was denied. So basically, Koulibaly served the first game of his 2-match suspension on the weekend. And I want to go back into this because it's not so much about Koulibaly's serving his suspension. It is more about the indictment of the FIGC, the way that they handled this. It was clear. Now, granted, I don't approve of Koulibaly losing his head, maybe saying the wrong thing, but that's kind of where we got to that's how we got to this position. And to not at least reduce his suspension, if not eliminate it, I think is wrong. It sets a precedence where, even though there is racial tensions happening at these football matches, that the player can't really do anything to protect himself, whether it be verbally or physically, really can't do anything to protect himself. And I think it sends a bad message for the minority players that might be in Italy at the moment. And it sends a bad message to the fans, because I think the fans then kind of feel emboldened at that point and say, well, you know, nothing's going to happen, so let's go ahead and make these racial chants towards these players that are on the opposing sides. So I think this is a bad optic for the Italian league in general and for the governing body itself, Robin. And what were your thoughts on this particular situation, what happened with it?
No, I agree. I think people need to realize that this is just going to continue to be an ongoing thing until people get, you know, as bad as I wanted to use this word, radical, in the sense that, you know, enough is enough. This is not going to change anything. You can make all the social movements you want and that kind of stuff, but if you don't, you know, get, this is kind of the more, like I said, a more radical way of doing things, and if you get these things done and you know, call people out and punish them in the sense that they need to be punished and be held accountable, then you're not going to solve anything if you don't do it. So I agree. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah, no doubt about it. And hopefully, you know, I want to see the Italian league get into doing something a little better than this. You know, going forward, they really need to do something to correct this, in my opinion. I think it's just a bad optic, and I think it's bad overall for the league. So, Rob, a couple quick things I wanted to update here. I know you heard me mention it to Roy when we had him on the show there earlier. Just to update everyone on the Gonzalo Higuain, all the moving parts saga that we have here. Higuain is scheduled to be in London tomorrow for his physical to finalize the deal to Chelsea. He was held out of the match this weekend. Piontek over at Genoa was actually sat this weekend. He is part of that 35 million euro move from Genoa over to Milan. He was out on the weekend because of yellow card accumulation. And the rumor is that Piontek could be confirmed as early as tomorrow for 35 million euros. Alvaro Morata was also held out on the weekend for Chelsea. His family has actually flown back to Spain, and it is assumed that he will be following them sometime either Tuesday or Wednesday of this week to finalize his move to Atleti once the Gonzalo Higuain move happens. And last but not least, like we had said, Marco Piazza is now the new kid on the block, possibly being loaned to Genoa by Juventus, who was currently on loan at Fiorentina to fill the Piontek spot. And the carousel continues to move. Odd man out right now, Rob. Mishi Batshuayi really has he has no island. He has no home. I know there was a possible move for him to Monaco. I believe that's fallen through at the moment. But are there any other transfer rumors, transfer happenings? We didn't talk about Kevin Prince-Boateng. Do you want to spend a second on that?
I mean, oh, wow. that's when I woke up this morning, I'm like thinking, wait, am I dreaming?
Yeah.
Is this real?
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. This is, Wow. It's almost as if, but you know what's weird? Mm. For some, remember the Paulinho move and yes. how that turned out?
Yes.
Why do I have a feeling this is probably going to be the same thing?
Could. It very well could. I mean, he's an experienced player. He's played for 10 different clubs. Four German clubs, Rob. Can you name them?
Ooh. Schalke?
Yes.
Is it Schalke? Yes. Yeah. Ooh. Wolfsburg? Did he play at Wolfsburg?
No.
He did not. Okay. Of course. Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yes. Schalke, Eintracht. Two more. I'll give them to you.
I think he started at Hertha, if I'm not mistaken.
Hertha Berlin is third.
Last
one.
No, Bremen? I really don't know.
Yellow Wall.
Dortmund. Oh, wow.
Dortmund, yes. He played at Dortmund. Those are the four teams in Germany that he played for. 10 teams overall. Again, like you said, this was a move out of left field. He'd been doing reasonably well at Sassuolo. But now the move over to Barca. And I'm surprised. I mean, I get bringing in the experience. I'm surprised we haven't seen more moves, Rob, with the rule lifted that these players can jump into Champions League right away. Even though if they're tied at a Champions League team and moving into a Champions League team, they can still play right away. If you recall back to the Philippe Coutinho move, which happened last January, he couldn't play for Barca in the Champions League because of Liverpool. So I'm surprised we haven't seen more of these moves. So let's go ahead and wrap up our topics there. Before we get to our matches of the week, Rob, and our trivia answer, let's hit our second promo for Onnit. Onnit is a health and fitness juggernaut dedicated to delivering total human optimization to its vast customer base of athletes, thinkers, fitness gurus, and entrepreneurs. Through a wide array of products and supplements, Onnit combines cutting-edge science, earth-grown nutrients, and time-tested strategies to help people reach peak performance. Whether you are climbing mountains or biking down them, building businesses or closing sales, chasing PRs in the weight room, or running a marathon, Onnit is the brand you want in your back pocket. As one of the fastest growing health and fitness companies in the world, Onnit refuses to bring anything but the very best to market. Whether it be energy bars, protein shakes, creatine, or their flagship product, Alpha Brain, Onnit's diverse lineup of products and supplements are backed by science and research. You can save up to 10% off by visiting www.onnit.com and using promo code BEYOND. That is www.onnit.com and using promo code BEYOND to save up to 10%. And thanks to the folks over at Onnit for that. Rob, I'm going to give it to you because you, my friend, have some matches of the week to watch this week. Go for it, man.
Yeah, no, I think we have a lot of good matches this weekend that I can't wait to definitely watch. But we have Marseille against Lille Friday at 2:45 p.m. in France. In La Liga, we have Atletico Madrid against Getafe Saturday at 10:15 a.m. Werder Bremen against Eintracht Frankfurt Saturday at 12:30 p.m. in the Bundesliga. In Italy, we have Lazio Juventus Sunday at 2:30 p.m. And in the EPL, we have the FA Cup. So there are no Premier League matches happening in England.
That'll do it. Let's get the trivia question again. I have some answers for you. I don't think I have it all correct, but I'm going to try.
Yeah, no, absolutely. A simple one, as I said in the beginning of the show, can you name the top five teams with the most goals in all competitions this season?
Okay, so the three easy answers, and shame on me for not remembering the graphic, but the three layup answers on this one are Manchester City.
Number one with 102 goals.
Liverpool.
Not in the list.
No, I thought Liverpool was in the list.
Not in the top five.
Oh, PSG.
Number two with 90.
Okay. And then from here, I'm losing. I want to say Barca, but I don't like my answer.
Barcelona with 78 is in third.
And Dortmund was the other one that I had written down.
Dortmund's not in the top five.
Okay, so I knew I had three, but I thought Liverpool was one, and it wasn't Barca. So what are the other two that I'm missing?
One in La Liga and one in the Premier League.
Okay, so one in La Liga and one in the Premier League. So Spurs?
Spurs is fifth with 70.
Okay, it's definitely not Real Madrid because they went through that huge stretch of no goals. So I'm going to go with, let me think. I'm going to go with Sevilla.
Sevilla in fourth with 71.
Wow. I knew it was, nope. It's never Atleti, right? Atleti's never the answer to that.
Nope, they're not in the top 10 at all.
Yeah, Real Madrid would have been the answer, but they remember that they had that huge stretch. Yep. Four or five games where they didn't score a goal. And then Villarreal, or actually Valencia, had a great season last year, but not doing quite as well this year. And Villarreal is actually fighting off relegation. So I knew it wasn't going to be any of those guys. So Sevilla just kind of made sense. Celta Vigo would have been my other option, but I didn't think it was them either. And I knew it wasn't a Serie A team because although you've got Cristiano Ronaldo, Juve isn't scoring like all these crazy goals. But their big thing right now is that they're not giving them up either. And right. So, and that's why they're arguably the best team in Europe right now, because they're conceded. I think they've conceded 8 goals in 20 matches right now. So it's some crazy number. So, all right. So with all of that done, Rob, let's hit the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right, man. So for episode 231 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Roy Namer from Mundo Abdi Celesti for joining us tonight. Next week, we're going to give you more league coverage, more transfer coverage. That will be our last show before the close of the transfer window. And our special guest, Jack Grimsey from Copa 90, is going to be joining us. So for episode 231 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.